Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, I'm Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Georgie Jorgensen. And our guest today is Tom Fee from Vector Wealth Management. Tom, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Hi, Tom.
Morning.
It's afternoon. Oh, what day is it? Well, we're here to talk about From Selling to Service, a Sea Change in Asset Management. Tom, what's this all about? Are you going to give us a little history lesson today about what's changed in wealth management over the last 100 years?
Boy, how much time do you have?
Well, let's get started and see where we go. Right.
Well, it's the industry, the financial services industry, of course, is centuries long. But over the last century or so, or century and a half, it has a long history of being the selling of financial products to a client who ultimately has to make the decision on the buy or the sell. And that's been the model for a long time, where the large wirehouses, they are a sales force that received compensation on the transaction. That is, if you buy 100 shares of 3M, then the compensation back to that broker who sold it to you would be at that transaction. And that is a model that there's many good people inside of it working within that model. It's a model that can create some real or perceived conflicts of interest. If my expectations on this financial product that I've just purchased are long-term growth over the next 3, 5, 10 years, but the compensation alignment is on the transaction, then where are the interests of my advisor and mine? Where do they line up? So it's been about the last 20, 25 years where there's been an evolution towards a different model, which is the registered investment advisor. And a registered investment advisor, if they are a pure advisor, do not receive any compensation on transactions related to the financial products such as bonds or stocks or mutual funds or separate accounts. They actually receive a fee over the period of time that the relationship continues that is commensurate with the work that is done. So this has been a real shift.
Is that more like a commission or a recurring fee? Or
it's a flat fee.
Oh, okay.
Relating to the amount of assets that are under management, and generally that fee gets smaller as the relationship gets larger.
Okay.
Sam, I've been accused of being old on the show before, but when I started trading back 35 years ago, I think the perception of those days was that some of those traders you couldn't trust because they might have been getting paid to sell a portfolio of IPOs or to sell some insurance or to do some things. They were getting commissions, and they weren't disclosing all of those things. There wasn't much transparency 35 years ago. Where today, the whole compensation of RIAs has changed dramatically, hasn't it, Tom?
Well, it has.
RIA, Registered Investment Advisor.
Okay.
Correct. And that's, as a matter of fact, Registered Investment Advisors do not hold securities licenses because they don't sell products. There are some that will do fee-based work, and there are some that will also do commission-based work. So you can have both fish and fowl in that case. But there's been a tremendous growth in the number of firms that are just pure RIA. And a number of those firms have come from accountants or other advisors that have formed businesses that want to move away from that traditional model. A number of wirehouse brokers have broken off and gone into the registered investment advisor model, either in part or in total. But I think what it really says is what we're trying to do is separate, the folks that are creating the products from the advisors that are reviewing those products for suitability and determining whether or not it matches the goals and objectives of their clients. So
they're truly being objective and looking out for their client's best interests as opposed to the company or the provider of that asset.
Whoever created it.
Yeah.
The difference, I think, is in the old days, they were salesmen, as you say, and traders. There was no such thing as a personal financial planner when I started in business. But in the last 25 years, there's been some extra training and some accreditation and so forth, and a lot more transparency in your fees, so that when you get a recommendation from someone like Tom, there's no hidden compensation behind the right. behind that might cause that to happen.
That's it. And the thing there, and still, I think I might be wrong in this number, but I think still over 50% of the businesses on a commission basis in the United States. It may not just be fully evident that that's what it is, but the if you're looking to try and eliminate doubt, the aspect of the financial services industry that will never change is that it's not guaranteed, that everything that the services that we're offering are trying to construct portfolios, along with the other things that wealth managers do, which is much broader than just the asset management. What we're trying to do is construct portfolios for some future benefit to our clients. And so it requires a high level of trust in this relationship because it isn't guaranteed. So when you have little items like, boy, I just got charged X for buying this product, or you know, this annuity has a 7-year back charge on it, so that I'm locked into this for a declining 5-6 4-3-2-1 sales charge on it, and it just, when the markets start getting goofy, especially like they are today, it can really diminish trust in your advisor when you're not certain what their motivations are. And it's really hard in those dark moments to have faith that they were looking out for your objectives. When you remove that real or construed conflict of interest from the equation, then it allows the client to think more clearly, is this advisor doing a good job for me, and do
you
I want to
become more of a partner with them?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Start building the trust, and any doubt on how they're getting paid and what their motivations might be really disappear, don't they?
That's correct. And also, I think the evolution of the registered investment advisor really helped create the genesis for wealth management instead of asset management. That's where we get to broaden out to say, well, it's not just about what's your portfolio doing here, but how do you take that portfolio and integrate it into a much broader spectrum of decisions that you have to make as a
not just individual. Those instruments you may be representing.
That's correct.
And these are perfect for you.
Correct. That's okay. That's right.
Well, let's talk
that's
about right. today's registered investment advisor as opposed to the trader salesman that I had 30 some years ago. How are they different? How are they trained? It's more than just fees. It's as you say, it's building a trust and having an advisory capacity and building a partner.
It is. It is, you know, just not to get too much back into history, but if you took the experience of an individual who was you're not in the financial services industry and in your 20s, you were approached by someone you went to school with or the friend of a neighbor.
Here's my case.
There you go. And that person said, "Let me. I'd like to help you with some of these financial decisions, and then I've got some products that'll match up, and here's some insurance, and here's some mutual funds, and you paid commissions on those products most certainly, especially because you didn't have enough assets to charge a fee to. So the only way to create enough compensation to make your relationship a possibility was to charge commissions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if two out of every three of those young financial advisors go away, then more than likely you were abandoned for a period of time until you accumulate more assets.
I just suffered.
Well, we also have Vector Counseling Services too, so we'll talk about that after we're out there. But until you accumulated more assets and someone else came and said, let me help you. And it's oftentimes, and we see this from the experience of the clients that we have, is they may have two or three or even four bad financial relationships. So by the time that they're in their 30s and 40s and really have the ability to to accumulate and save, they have a very low trust threshold. So
rebuilding that trust. Well, now when they're business owners, so they're putting all of their money back into their businesses.
Because they can trust themselves.
Exactly.
Right.
Sure, self-control.
Right. Yeah.
As Tom says.
You know what you're going to do, both up and down. You pretty much can gauge the market, supposedly.
As Tom says, in my 30 years, I've worked with four financial people. Several of them were traders, and one of them is an RIA. And the latest one has built a lot of trust with me because there's some transparency, and because she's been able to help me make choices of the hundreds and thousands of choices of places to put your money today, where in the old days it was stocks and bonds and maybe an IPO here and there. Today there's all kinds of choices, and how can you really, if you're running a business 24/7, how can you really pay enough attention to get out there and decide where to put your money? But you're right, there's a whole trail of people that didn't do very well by me in 35 years, but finally I was lucky enough to find a good one.
Right.
Well, you brought up the trust issue, and then you've got business owners who don't have that, who are now probably over-accumulating or over whatever that is.
Right, right. And that's in that there is absolute truth in that. And the one thing that we can always say to a business owner is there's no one in this country that will work harder to produce wealth for yourself than you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have that business and it's still in a growth mode and you have enough time, then reinvesting back in your business, the vast majority of your assets, is not a bad decision. However, trying to determine should it be 95 or 90 or 85% reinvestment is very challenging because nobody knows your business like you do. However, when you get into that universe of one, if you try and make all of those decisions in a vacuum, inevitably you may be okay, but you might not optimize.
Well, how do you, here's the question I have. You've got these people, there's a whole, probably a generation of us, anywhere from 40 to 60, 40, 55, I don't know, and who don't have that trust. But we do run our businesses. We do trust ours. How do you
How do we find a good wealth manager we can trust? That's
right,
how
exactly.
Does that business owner go about
you
that?
Or you find us?
Well, it's interesting because one of the things I find fascinating about this registered investment advisor business, because I came into this business at 37. My degree was in finance, but I wasn't born into the financial services industry. I joined it with the advisor who managed my money, and after a year decided to start my own firm because there's a certain way that I believed it should be done. So, the question, how do people find firms like ours, is challenging. There are probably, I will be wrong on this number, but somewhere in the neighborhood of 24,000 independent registered investment advisors in the United States. Firms of our size and up comprise the top 4 to 6% of those advisors, and not that firms smaller than us can't be successful, because that's not true. There's some wonderful smaller firms, but there's a certain amount of staying power. There's a certain amount of expense in having all of the tools and systems necessary to execute that full relationship. And so this group, this diverse group of 24,000 firms, is the largest provider of wealth management services to the affluent in the United States today. And we've never bought a spot in the Super Bowl. We do not have a common voice like some of the larger wirehouses do when they put together their advertising programs and have animals walking through living rooms. But yet we've been able to become the number one provider. And what it is that clients are kind of voting with their feet. They're saying, I'm not satisfied with this, and I want to find a different way. And so our business tends to be, all of our business, not just our firm, but the registered investment advisor model, tends to be a referral business. Hey, you should go talk to these people. This is the way they work.
But if I don't know, I'm affluent. I've been burned. I have most of my money in my business. I may have been putting stuff aside because I bought land and, I paid off the house or something like that, right? How do I know? I don't have good advice to even know. I mean, I would look at you and say, ooh, top 4 to 6%, too expensive. I'm not affluent enough for that.
How do you define affluent?
Well, that's a great, there's two wonderful points you said that. How do I know I'm affluent? Most, the the definition of affluent could loosely be described as individuals that have 500,000 plus of investable assets. That might be 500,000 to 5 million. There seems to kind of be that bubble in there of quiet people who have done a nice job of accumulating, but they never feel affluent because they don't have enough information to understand that
exactly.
definition, which is one of the challenges of doing that. And then you have your wealth kind of in different places. You might have land. You might, as you said, you might have a duplex that you bought in your 20s and never got rid of. You might have a business that's generating $500,000 of free cash flow every year, of which $400,000 is going back in the business. See,
Exactly.
It's never
I want that business.
Wealth. Affluence. I would even suggest that wealthfluence is wealthfluence. That's a new word.
You heard it here
Record
first.
That one. That's right. That's trademarked, by the way, for anybody out there listening. Is that affluence really is a personal level? If you have $1 million of assets and you are spending $10,000 a year, you're affluent because of the way you've set your life together. So, but for this business affluence and to be able to work with firms like ours, it's actually, it can be less expensive to work with firms like ours, because traditionally where we can, it's not that we wouldn't like to work with people with 10 or 15 or $50,000 or $100,000. We simply can't, because our fees are so thin, we lose money on that relationship. It's not a lack of desire. Quite frankly, it's a frustration that I have and a passion around that those that can't afford our services is how do we get that? Actually, it's just a challenge that the fee that we charge, that flat fee, does not pay us enough for our time in a year to be in a profitable relationship, which we should be with every client. We should be able to make a reasonable income off the services that we deliver. Value given for value received.
Okay, let's get down to the nuts and bolts. Tom, you're an affluent business owner, and you're looking to interview some wealth managers. What questions are you going to ask? How are you going to determine, is this the right firm for me?
All right, just no questions. Just call me.
Just call you. Well, that's done. Everybody hard time.
I think one of the things you really want to do is ask those questions about depth of experience within the firm. How many individuals? How long have you been in business? References. You want references, and quite frankly, ask for someone who doesn't work with you anymore. You know, what of those relationships that didn't work, can you give me a name of someone?
You don't have any former clients. You've kept them all,
yeah,
haven't you?
That's right.
So that isn't going to work.
Well, that's that would be a perfect world.
Do you look at assets under management? Do you look at investment philosophy, those type of things?
Yes, definitely. I think what you want to know is this a sustainable business? I think one of the challenges of the financial services industry is what I call the silo. You have a financial advisor who has a peer planner with them, and they make decisions with, you know, as an individual business unit within maybe a larger company. I think it's really important, and most of the RIAs will create a firm value. The larger firms have the ability to create an infrastructure that allows you to really have a relationship with a firm. Ultimately, this is a personality business, and you're deciding to work with an individual, but it's part of the flaw of the business that goes back 150 years. Dependence on an individual rather than a firm and a process that is sustainable.
With different specialties.
Correct, and sustainability. I mean, I like to say if I get hit by a bus, I hope my partner wasn't driving it. but if I'm gone.
Yeah, but if you saw him paying the insurance premium the day before,
yeah,
you're in trouble.
Right. I always check that level. Am I worth more dead or alive there? Just try and hit that line.
So I'm always looking over my shoulder.
Correct.
You use the term paraplanner. What does that mean?
Well, a paraplanner is just a term within the industry for someone who assists the advisor in the process of gathering information and bringing it back to the client in a way that's understandable.
So there again, you're talking about the firm and people with different specialties, and they can all bring it to bear for your customer on whatever it is that, however they want to invest.
That's correct. And it's not just asset management, it's debt management, it's protection planning, it's integrating with the trust and estates attorneys to make sure that we've got a plan that really fits a client's needs. You know, we have a few clients that know each other that they have LLC envy. and LLC envy is that a lot of times you want to isolate certain assets out of your name. If you have a cabin in Wisconsin and somebody, you know, drives a boat over one of the neighbors, is that going to destroy your net worth? That tragedy going to destroy your net worth? And do you want to isolate that potential liability into an LLC that's named after the lake you live on? So there are cases where you know, especially with physicians, where you want to make certain that you're doing asset protection strategies that make sure, again, that in the case of any type of a tragedy, that you leave as much of the estate intact as possible.
It gets to be that issue of putting together the team again, because we've all heard the stories where husband and wife, grown-up children, one of the grandchildren uses the car, gets in an accident, and it was titled in the grandparents' name, and they get sued for all they're worth because it was a serious accident. So some of those issues you need to pull together your team, which is your attorney and your accountant and your wealth manager, and just talk about how do we protect these assets from these potential liabilities without getting crazy about doing that.
That's correct. And by the way, this is not a problem from today.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
You hear these historical problem or stories of people with hundreds of millions of dollars and never executed a plan. And really, I think it's, quite frankly, I think it's unreasonable to ask people to try and do this themselves. I mean, I think of the story of my father, who was a physician for a long time in St. Paul, I mean, decades, 50 years or more. And I think of how he would walk into a patient's room and exude confidence as he came towards that patient, and how he talked about not only the skills that he learned as a physician were important, but the confidence that the patient had in my dad's ability to heal or to make them feel better. And that confidence is wonderful in your area of specialty. Can also be a little bit of a curse in those areas where you don't know. And so when we get clients coming in that are business owners that have built successful businesses over years and have accumulated wealth from that, and they exude confidence, it can hamper their ability to trust an industry that has not done a great job of developing trust in it.
Just letting our guard down, being vulnerable, in general terms. I mean, both Tom and I have firms that give advice, and we're always providing options and choices and advice to our clients. And now we come to someone else and say, don't know the questions even.
Correct. And that's they can really not serve you well.
Right.
As you try and figure out how to map your whole life together. And it's unfortunate. It's human nature to have that issue, and it's also a little bit structural in the way that the financial industry has served clients for a long time, where there was a compensatory relationship around a transaction, i.e. I got paid for selling something.
Mm-hmm.
With that out of the picture, and a different service model. Again, we don't sell products, we sell our services. And then we charge a fee so that there's no variance in our motivations, although there wouldn't be, but just to get that construed conflict out of the way is just a wonderful thing.
You know, they really become something of a life coach as a wealth manager, because as you go through your different cycles of business ownership, when you start a business, you're trying to get that first client, you're trying to pay the bills, you're trying to build a business, set yourself out as an expert in some niche, whatever it is. And then you get to the mature level of your business, and you're building and making some good money, and then you get to the tail end of the cycle, and you got to start thinking about how long am I going to do this, and who am I going to sell it to? The same thing's going on in during life. You know, you're starting out, and you're having children, and you're paying for the house, and you're doing these things, and then you get into your middle years, and you're trying to accumulate some wealth, and probably paying for college and those kind of things, and then pretty soon, hey, we got to think about that next phase of life after we don't have to work anymore. So you really have to walk people through these different phases of accumulating wealth and paying the bills, accumulating wealth, and then maybe going to retirement, whatever
that
is.
Well, isn't there a whole lot of changes that occur? You were talking about once your kids have grown up. What about, you know, there's a friend of mine said, advised me, when your company becomes successful, that's when the options open up and the opportunities open up you have no clue about.
And at that time, you're 24/7, you're running out of day without running out of things to do, and you need someone you can trust that's watching over your financial assets.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And the financial aspects, not to underemphasize that, or really not to overemphasize it is a better way of saying it, is that it's just a part of the wealth management process. And that's where this evolution in the industry away from product. You know, the product is simply fills a specific need when we're there, but it's the process of making sure that we've got everything set up the way it should be relating to the business. You know, okay, what decisions can we help with through that process? We can't help you run your business better. Only you know your business that well, but we can certainly from the side in our experience as advisors to other business owners to try and be somewhat of a board of advisors to making
this successful. Formal training now as well, so that, I mean, this is a skill set that's acquired and used in addition to the experience it's acquired through application, right?
That's correct. And I think it's part of that sea change that's occurring is that if you think about when we were talking earlier about how young people used to interface or start in the financial services industry, they came in as a sales position to sell financial products to their college roommates. And now what we've got is programs at the University of Texas, Mankato State, University of Wisconsin, and Madison. They're wonderful programs with the end result being sitting for a certified financial planner designation. And when you get that CFP designation, a lot of the firms like us, the RIAs, are looking for these young individuals that want to come in and not race towards six-figure incomes, but really make a difference in people's lives and have the pace right. You know, you should have the greatest economic opportunities you can at any given age, but it's not a race to the highest income in this model. It's a race to making sure that your clients are served well, that you're seasoned, that you mature through a process that makes you a very valuable young advisor at 32 or 35 or 36, not a salesperson at 23.
It really, because of the sea change, you've got a healthier situation from a client's viewpoint, because now you're hiring someone to help you with your wealth accumulation, wealth management. And hopefully you're hiring a firm that's full of a number of specialties that all come to bear on your specific circumstances, and there's transparency in the fees and in your motivation as a wealth manager.
That's correct. And as we talked about, this is kind of a quiet model. You know, we don't have a common voice. We never bought the spot in the Super Bowl, but we are becoming much more. We manage more of the affluence wealth in the United States than any other model. And that's a wonderful thing. And as Malcolm Gladwell in his book, The Tipping Point, talked about, there are times that significant change happens for almost an unexplainable reason. I think the financial services industry is getting towards that, and I think that's a good thing. The model of selling products is not the best model, but there are a lot of good people inside that model doing it the right way. So we will have a sea change and continue to have a sea change in asset management towards the selling of services, not products, which is good for the client.
And then for business owner clients that are looking to align themselves with a good wealth manager, what you're saying is learn about the firm, how much money under management, what type of specialties within the firm. Get right down into the interview process and make sure you feel comfortable with your wealth manager.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think, and that's, you know, that process of, you know, finding the right firm is always going to be the challenge. And sometimes that's a blocker. I'm so busy with my life. Now I've got to go try and find somebody I can trust with my life that I've worked 35 years to do. It's a very, very challenging thing to do. But the first thing I would suggest is get the model right. If the model has eliminated a lot of the real construed conflicts of interest, which I keep repeating, then you're probably going to be closer to the objective that you're looking for, so you can then get to that next level of asking the questions about firm structure, client size, assets under management, things that let you know that they're sustainable and successful.
So take your time. It's one of the most important decisions you're going to make that's going to have an impact on your retirement. Unfortunately, that's about all the time we have for today. So I'm Tom Lyons here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Jorgie Jorgensen. Tom Fee from Vector Financial, thank you for being with us today on todaysbusinessradio.com.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.